Tech of Sports, episode 25 for September 12th, 2012. Dr. David Geyer. This week on the Tech of Sports, Dr. David Geyer. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. And don't forget the Stitcher Radio app for all iOS devices. Stitcher Radio, it's an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher, it's smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. The Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. Join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live, where you can join the chat room and listen to the show live. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us tonight on a Wednesday, and we're going to go a little different direction tonight. And where we've been talking about some technology issues and some other things the last couple of weeks, we're going to go and look a little at the world of sports injuries and how technology relates to that and some of the injury situations going on in the world of sports. And we got a great guest for that. And, you know, it's part of sports. Whether you like him or not, injuries happen every day, every week at all levels and in every sport, really. And, you know, some are more serious than others, and we'll take a look at that. And we have a great guest on tonight, a friend of mine, Dr. David Geyer, who's on with us from Charleston. And he's a nationally renowned sports medicine expert. He appears on numerous national publications, the New York Times, USA Today, Washington Post. I interviewed him for Yahoo News a couple times. He's based in, like I said, Charleston, South Carolina. He created the Medical University of South Carolina Sports Medicine Program, a great program where he has a team of trainers, physical therapists that are focused on providing treatment, prevention, and wellness information for athletes of all ages and all levels, skill levels. It's great. He has almost a decade of experience with professional and college athletes. He's the tournament physician for the Family Circle Cup Women's Tennis Association tournament in Charleston, as well as the Charleston Battery and Washington University. He also assisted the orthopedic care of the St. Louis Cardinals, the St. Louis Rams, and the U.S. women's soccer team. He's very knowledgeable about sports and injuries. He's passionate about sports. That's why I like him. And he's my go-to guy when I need information on sports injuries. And David, it's great to have you on tonight. Good to see you again.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you. This is should be fun. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, I get to see you from a distance here over the computer. So
that's true. It's not 100 degrees like when we usually see each other at the Family Circle Cup.
Yeah, I'm not swatting no seams away either. So I'll take that any day of the week. And let me just throw one disclaimer out here. I'm sure you'll appreciate this. Just want to let everyone know that some of the players and injuries we'll talk about tonight, you haven't treated any of these players, and you're only basing your opinions on what you've maybe heard or read about the situation. So hopefully that'll give some insight. So you don't have really firsthand knowledge of these injuries, but we'll talk about them nonetheless, and your opinion is very very welcome. So I guess we'll just kind of start out real quick. It seems to me that, you know, in covering sports, that, you know, sports injuries are scrutinized today so closely and so hard, more than any other time or era. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there's no question. I think the media, I think, rightly or wrong, I think that's a lot of it. You know, the 24-hour news cycle and chat rooms and message boards, it's raised awareness of sports in all facets. And what that has done is that instant information people want, you know, it's not good enough to just say, you know, he's out with a knee sprain, and then you get information 3 weeks later when he comes back, or, you know, a female athlete comes back. People want to know right then and there, and the availability of the internet, you know, people want specifics. And so it's great that all that information, people want it fast. But then the problem gets to, there's a gap sometimes between the information that you get either from the teams, you know, that don't really want to disclose a lot of information, and then the media, you know, a lot of times, right or wrong, doesn't have a lot of medical information. And so then, you know, that's where there's a lot of, when there's uncertainty or not a lot of knowledge, then you have fans somewhat frustrated. And so that's where I think you see some of the issues, some of the team doctors that have faced a lot of controversy over the last few years. I think a lot of that is really not because of bad decisions or anything like that. It's just this constant quest for information and kind of a gap between, the knowledge and the delivery of that knowledge.
In the media, we call that misinformation, and I think a lot of it's because, all right, I'm gonna criticize some of my fellow media members. They're not the most savvy when it comes to knowing about injuries and body parts. And I mean, very few members of the media are doctors or have the knowledge. So I tend to side with, if a media person's saying one thing and a team doctor's saying another thing, I tend to probably side with the team doctor right. that they know best, I guess.
And it's a tough position because the team doctor is really in a tough position when you're the doctor of a particular, athlete or a group of athletes. There's the medical confidentiality issue. So you can't really give, specific medical information unless the team says it's okay. Well, my experience with that at various levels, and I think all of us that do this will say, it's not that they don't, that they're trying to really hide anything. There's a lot of different reasons, but they don't really want a lot of specifics. And so it really puts the team physician in a tough position. So what happens is if you notice most of these injuries, the team physician never talks. So what you get is either the general manager or the coach giving information. And again, that gets to the, that's not their area of expertise. The reporters, that's not their area of expertise. And then nothing on the medical side. And that's where I think it leads to a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, just as recently as a decade ago, you used to be able to have sideline reporters at the game walk over to the injured players sitting there with the, the big ice pack on their knee and ask them how they feel and what's wrong. And now that, with all the laws that have gone into effect, all that information, like you said, is shielded now. And that's where, I mean, it's good, I guess, for sports talk radio and for, people that like to talk about it, they can, everyone's an armchair quarterback. I guess everyone can be an armchair doctor, I guess, at some point, too. So it's kind of fun. But we'll talk about more about professional and world-class athletes in a minute. With so many injuries and with so much coverage of injuries, professional and world-class athletes, give a couple tips or a couple things that, the weekend warrior athlete like me or just people that like sports in general or still think they're 18 and can go out there and do what they did when they were in shape, a couple tips for them on how to maybe prevent injuries and then how, if they, feel get nicked up a little bit or feel some pain, what they should do to get back and to the field of play or back to enjoying their sports.
No, sure. I think there's one I'm going to point out for each of those as far as what you can do to prevent injuries, because you see this so often with exercise programs, people trying to lose weight or get in shape or trying to start a sport. They've been not doing much all summer and then they join a rec league soccer team. There is a level that you have to work back into sports and exercise. You can't just go train for a marathon or a half marathon and start from basically not running to running 30 miles a week. That is going to very quickly lead to overuse injuries, things like stress fractures, or honestly, it starts as just pain. And then as you keep trying to train through it or play through it, you start to develop stress fractures and any number of injuries. So, decide what your goal is. If you're going to start playing on a rec league soccer team in September, maybe in July you start running a little bit and you get out on the field and do drills with some friends, things like that, and you gradually increase up to it. So that would be my one take-home kind of prevention tip. From a treatment standpoint, going along that same lines is be very careful about this idea of playing through pain. It's not that I wouldn't do it. People ask me all the time about what's good pain and what's bad pain? What's pain that's okay to try to play through or run through or lift weights through and what's not? And it doesn't work quite that well. There's not a sharp pain is okay, is bad, and dull pain is okay. You basically have to decide is whatever symptom, be it pain, be it, pain, maybe it's uncomfortable running downhills, but the rest of the time it's okay. Or when you throw a pitch, you can't locate it. If whatever your symptom is keeping you from doing what you want to do as well as you want to do it, it's worthwhile to get it checked out, especially early, because a lot of times if you can catch some of these problems early, tweak some of your training maybe, some simple maybe exercises to add in, a lot of times you can prevent this from becoming a big problem that shuts you down for weeks and months.
Yeah, I think you made a good point that prevention is the key and catching things early is the key. I think those are great points. Another great point, I know you're a tennis fan and have experience with being the physician talk doctor for the Family Circle Cup. You see, when tennis players get injured, more than any other sports, I think they really take their time coming back. you know, they may be ready to go at some point, and then they still wait another 3-4 weeks, and like you said, work back up to where they were kind of when they were injured. You see, sometimes you see players coming back before they're probably ready, but I think tennis players, and I don't know if that's the doctors they're getting that from or their coaches, but I think a lot of the tennis players really hold off after an injury and come back until they're really ready. And we'll talk about one famous tennis player in a little bit about his injury. I guess, and you have some experience with football. We saw a serious injury this past weekend with a Tulane football player, Devon Walker, and a head-to-head collision. I'm always amazed. I mean, you hate to see things like that happen. I'm always amazed that there's not more serious injuries in the sport of football with the size of these players, the speed they're going, how strong they are. And I've talked with another doctor I had on my show back months ago who played football actually as well. And he said the real serious injuries in football mainly come from an accident. The player was doing something they weren't supposed to be doing, or it's just a freak play. And I think that's what happened in the Tulane game. I think he hit his own player, basically, is how the injury was sustained. You know, why don't we see, I'm glad we don't, but why don't we see more serious injuries in college and professional football with the action that's really going on in the field? It's dangerous out there.
No question. And I think you make a good point about these guys are faster than they ever have been. They're stronger than they have been. The biggest thing in terms of catastrophic events in football, the head injuries and the cervical spine, the neck injuries and the paralysis, really dropped significantly when they instituted tackling, not restrictions, but guidelines, basically no spearing, meaning you didn't hit players with the top of your helmet, or you know, this idea that you were looking up so you didn't get your neck snapped back. I don't know if you remember, but Chucky Mullins, sure. I think he was at Ole Miss.
Ole Miss, yep.
You know, those injuries really changed how they approach tackling. And when we realize that that's probably the biggest risk factor, I mean, yes, it can still happen. Like you mentioned, a freak injury, like I saw the replay as well of the Tulane player, and it did look like he hit his own player. But, you know, now they're taught tackling at a very young age, and that's been the biggest thing that's really decreased that. The other side of it, too, is now we have physicians, obviously, at the college and pro level, but these kids get the pre-participation screenings, even down into the youth level. So, albeit things get, you know, happen, heart issues and cardiac or heat stroke and things like that, we're screening more and more of that. So some of that will happen, but I think we've done a good job identifying people as best we can that can't play or that shouldn't play for medical reasons, and then we're teaching proper techniques that prevent catastrophic injuries.
Good point. Good point. And I'm glad to see that really has decreased those catastrophic injuries. And then as far as, you know, coaches now being more aware, and I know here in Georgia, they have a monitor that's on every high school football field that shows the heat index. And when the heat index gets over a certain temperature, every 10 or 15 minutes, the players are forced to stop for water breaks and for like a 5-minute break or whatever. So I think the coaches have wised up to that. Or I mean, maybe it's not the coaches have wised up to it, but school officials and administrators have, because of the lawsuits and realizing that, you know, it's especially in the South, it's hot out there when those practices first start. And you think that's been a good move?
Absolutely. If you think about heat illness, and, you know, heat illness is the general term, that, you know, anywhere from just where you get dehydrated and overheated all the way up to the heat stroke and heat deaths. If you think about, there's probably no better example of an injury that's truly preventable than that. I mean, it just, if you take proper precautions, it just shouldn't happen. As you pointed out, I think, to be fair, and I'm not saying this is necessarily wrong with coaches, they just want to win and they want their kids practicing so that they can win. Most of the changes have occurred way above them with the athletic trainers and the physicians and, quite honestly, the school boards. And it really goes all the way up to the state. South Carolina just passed a rule this high school season about getting players used to the heat. And it's a 2-week process from the first day of practice for the first 2 weeks, and basically starts helmets and shorts essentially over a couple of days. They add in pads, but then they alternate long and short days and take mandatory breaks like you mentioned. But it's being mandated, and what they're trying to do is get kids ready for the heat. If you look at most of the heat deaths in football, especially, but all high school and really youth sports, they almost always occur in the first 2 weeks of practice. And so that's where you just have to mandate it, quite honestly, because we know that people, you know, parents, coaches, they want to win. So you've just got to make it a rule. And if everybody follows the rule, in theory, one, you're going to prevent the deaths, and two, you're not going to have anybody with an unfair advantage.
And I think some of the schools and coaches have gotten rid of those two-a-days, and where they still maybe have two practices in a day, the one practice is in pads, and then the second practice they've made more of a film study type thing. So that's at least, I think that's helped out the situation as well. Another problem in football, and this is the one that's been beaten to death, and you know everyone's talked about it, and it's been on every news show and in all the papers, is the problem with the concussions. Mm-hmm. In football at all levels. I mean, ranging from Pop Warner League all the way up through high school, college, and pros. And they've made so many changes, and they're so cautious with that. Now, you think we're on the right track with that?
I do think we're on the right track. I will say, though, that I think we have a long way to go. I think we're just now realizing how dangerous this is. And I think we're probably years, maybe decades away from having enough research to really make better recommendations. I mean, it's just really been this last couple of years, and really the last 12 months especially, that we're really seeing the effects of the repeated blows to the heads that aren't necessarily, quote, concussions, these subconcussive blows, but the repeated damage that that can cause in terms of memory loss and personality changes has been the really frightening one. These kids that all of a sudden don't seem like they have any emotion at all, or they become angrier than they were. And then obviously what that seems to lead to down the road, especially when you throw in depression into there, the suicides. And so A lot of that is just coming to light. And I think there's going to be a lot more research that's being needed. And to be fair, we are across the country doing that research. The problem is I think what we're going to find is that despite what some people think, we're not going to find we're wrong. If anything, we're going to find that this has been vastly underestimated. What's going to be interesting is if we can figure out equipment and things like that that have any success at preventing this. I think we're starting to be, quite honestly, a little more skeptical, quite honestly, that any fancy helmet or that any fancy pad really is going to have an effect. This is a prevention issue, and I think we're going to start to see that. The other question that leads to, and I'm kind of curious your thoughts on this too, is at what point parents say, you know what, this isn't worth it. I tell you, in my office, I'm hearing that more and more about, you know, the parents are just hearing these news reports, and they're like, you know what, I don't know that I want my kids subjecting themselves to that. Now, I'm not going to throw the sport of football under the bus, but I think until we get more and more research to really make proper recommendations, I think that's an understandable response.
Yeah, and I don't want to throw football under the bus either. It's not just football. Doctors Right. Now, even in basketball, ice hockey, soccer, lacrosse, they're more aware of the problem of concussions as well now too. So it's, you know, we always talk about it as football because the NFL's the 500-pound gorilla. So and football's had probably more visible problems than other sports. But people have asked me, and me being with technology and sports, they said if you could invent one product that would if you could invent one product, what would it be in the world of sports technology? I said, if somebody could invent a concussion-proof football helmet, you could name your price for that product, and everyone would buy it. You would be an instant zillionaire in a matter of weeks, because there's not a college or pro team or high school anywhere that wouldn't want to investigate the merits of a product like that to protect their players. So that's interesting. We do have a long way, I think, to go with concussions, and that's where, like you said, the technology comes into play. They keep making the equipment better and better, and I think that's going to help in the long run. And we're with Dr. David Geyer from Charleston, South Carolina, one of the experts in sports medicine around the country. And we're going to take a quick break here, David, so catch your breath or grab a sip of water, and going to do a quick break for Amazon.com. And if you are doing any shopping on Amazon in the coming weeks, coming months, you can use the affiliate link here at the studio, netcaststudio.com/Amazon, and that will help support the studio here and all the all the great shows that are offered on it, and appreciate people that have used that link in the past, because you know, it's very worthwhile, and like I said, it helps promote the studio and keep the studio afloat. And with the new family of Kindles that was introduced in the last week, if you're going to be ordering a Kindle for someone for a birthday, for an anniversary present, and then with the holidays coming up, just use that link. It's no extra cost to you, and it's easy. netcaststudio.com/Amazon, and helps us bring people like Dr. Geyer on the program and be informative and educational, appreciate you using that link. And David, let's just I'll give you a chance here to plug anything you want to plug, or if people have questions for you, how do they contact you? And maybe, sure. I think you're a great account to follow on Twitter too, so throw that out and have awesome. People follow you.
Well, I will say, if people like this and what I do, and I maintain a blog. Obviously, you and I kind of communicate through that and through Twitter. So I write a sports medicine blog, drdavidgeier.com, and it's drdavidgeier. And that's my Twitter handle as well, Dr. David Geyer. And I love talking about not just injuries. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love talking about injuries when athletes get hurt and speculating about what they have and offering insight about treatments. But I also like talking about, you know, various, you know, ways to get in shape and ways to avoid injuries getting in shape and ways to prevent injury and overall health, sometimes talk nutrition, things like that. So anything like that, check it out. I also do an Ask Dr. Geyer column, so I can't give specific advice, but I can at least point people in the right direction, give general medical information. So I'd say my blog and my Twitter handle, drdavidgeyer.com and at drdavidgeyer on Twitter. Love Twitter, like you do, I think, Rick. Twitter, I think, is far and away my favorite, one of the social media sites. I love the instant information, so people can absolutely reach out there.
Yeah, it's Doctor with D-R, and then David, and then Geyer is G-E-I-E-R. If people don't know how to, if they don't have the website in front of them. And David, what I like about you is you're, you know, you're great. You're not only a doctor, but you're a sports fan as well, and you act kind of as an advocate on your site and with your Twitter account. So I think people really appreciate that, and you really are looking out to improve things for athletes and for the betterment of sports. So we appreciate that, and you do a great job with that. Let's move on here, and again, we'll come back to tennis here real quick. You know, one of the top tennis players in the world is Rafael Nadal. And, you know, he has probably one of the most talked about injuries right now. He has bad knees, and he's had them for a while. And I think one of his knees in particular, a patella problem, has sidelined him for the entire second half of the tennis season. And he's one of the most popular players, and people love him. He's got a legion of fans. You know, it hurts tennis having him out of action. What do you know about his injury and how he's being treated, and they appear to be siding on the side of being cautious with him returning. So I probably think he's out for the rest of the year. They're going to just shut him down and wait till next year. But what do you know about that situation?
It's funny you say that. I actually wrote about that for my newspaper column in the Post and Courier for tomorrow, actually.
Preview in your column.
I am. Check out that. I hope I get
Post
this right.
Courier.
It's postandcourier.com. Exactly. It should be in there. It's interesting. I think it's been 2009 somewhere, he's been having these off and on patella tendon problems. And that's the tendon below the kneecap that attaches to the front of your shin bone. And it's always been it's been kind of described as a patella tendonitis. Well, according, and this is actually from a statement from Nadal over the last couple of weeks, that doctors have actually found a small, they describe it as a partial tear of his patella tendon as it inserts into the tibia, the top of the shin bone. Now they're saying it's small, and you know, they're saying he doesn't need surgery, that he's going to give his knee time to rest, and they'll rehab it and then hopefully come back soon. Here's the thing, and I suspect he's had all along, and that this is just an advanced version of what he's been having, is that his patella tendon has probably for a while, due to overuse, I mean, the nature of him playing and the volume of tennis that he plays, that he's had an area within his tendon where the tendon essentially degenerates, and it's a small area, but it hurts. And the problem with that problem, quite honestly, is that there's not an easy treatment. You do things like rest, you do things maybe like a patella tendon strap or taping, you know, that kind of thing. Obviously, physical therapy and strengthening. But at the end of the day, there aren't really, you know, easy ways to get that tendon to heal. There's some unproven injections. Cortisone is actually counterproductive, and we think would actually make that less likely to heal. But that's where you start hearing about things like prolotherapy, and you start hearing things like platelet-rich plasma. And there's actually been some rumors on some of the Spanish sites that he's been undergoing that in the last few months as well. But the other side of this is, there's not really a good surgery for that. If you were to go in and try to cut that out and then reattach it, success rates for that problem, and again, I'm not involved in Nadal's care, but we know across a lot of different athletes in pro sports over the years that, you know, surgery for these chronic patella tendon areas of degeneration don't do well as far as athletes getting back. So the question gets to, at what point do the doctors say, hey, look, we're going to back him off of his schedule? And that's what I was talking about in the article. Do you have him play fewer events a year, and maybe you focus on the Grand Slams like the Williams sisters have done? Do you maybe have him play less hard court tournaments? And I think that's going to be the interesting thing. Everybody's been like, well, why doesn't he have surgery? It's because there isn't a really good surgical option for that. It's not like a meniscus tear or a torn ACL where you do a surgery and it, you know, it's not black and white like that. Really tough problem, because as a fan, I hate it. He's one of my favorite athletes to watch, but it's not an easy injury. And tennis is really prone to those overuse sports. They pound on their knees and ankles and feet over and over, hours at a time, day after day, and their season is essentially year round now. So I think, to be fair, these players are at risk for those type of injuries these days.
Yeah, we'll lead into that in a second, and I think when he does come back, and let's hope he comes back soon, when he does come back, it's his scheduling is going to be really important, how he goes about and makes his schedule. And like you said, the hard court versus clay, I think there's been some studies recently that showed people think as clay it's a little more forgiving, it's better to play on. But the fact is the points are longer on clay. There's a lot more running, that sliding. I mean, the clay court events take as much out of you or more, I think, than the hard court events. So like you said, there really is no easy solution for that. And I know back in March and April, we had a long discussion at the Family Circle Cup about the women players, and you were adamant saying that a lot of these injuries, and you just kind of let in what are caused by these players playing too much. And I mean, they can play 40 weeks a year. I mean, tournaments, their schedule is long. It's a long year. I mean, are the players playing too much? I mean, we talked about it, but kind of talk about it for the audience, how not getting those weeks off hurts these people down the road.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the issues with the way that tennis is set up, in the sense they go from city to city to city, and basically it's sort of triage medicine. They basically have a pain and they kind of put Band-Aids on it and go to the next city and you know, try to play there. But they're constantly putting their bodies through a lot of, obviously, practices and matches, but then the effects of all that travel without long periods of rest. The way the season is set up, there aren't really long periods of rest. And we know this from the youth level, but it really applies to sports at the pro, all the way up to the pro level, in high level, top athletic adults, that your body needs periods of time to rest, especially if you play a sport that involves the same motions over and over again. Baseball pitching, running in soccer, where you're pounding on your feet and ankles, and yes, tennis, where you're serving and doing forehands and backhands, same motion over and over again. You really want to try to give your body, you know, ideally even 2 to 3 months consecutively, to give that time to rest. Not just sitting on the couch, but doing other things and lifting weights and things like that. The season is not set up that way anymore, and their ranking system is such that they feel obligated to play. So they're just not getting enough rest. They're doing the best they can to manage it while they're on the road and taking tournaments off here and there. But the way it's set up makes it very hard for them.
They want to have a long career. And, you know, it looks like players are, in a lot of sports, really reaching the peak later on. Now, tennis, golf, even NBA basketball. It used to be when you were 30, you were pretty much on your way out or just kind of hanging on. Now, with so many players in tennis ranked in the top 20 that are in their 30s, and golfers now still being competitive, you know, it used to be as they were getting near time for the Champions or Seniors Tour, they weren't really competing on the regular tour. Now these guys are winning at the age of, you know, 49 and 48, and Tom Watson is in his 60s and he's still playing with the young kids. Is it because they're taking care of the body better and because of modern medicine that these players are almost, they used to be freaks, but more and more people are doing it now.
Right.
It's becoming more commonplace.
No, I would agree completely, and I would almost say all of the above to what you said. I think there's no question that sports nutrition has advanced and sports training has advanced, off-season weightlifting, and all of that has made them better athletes. But then I will throw the other side of this out too, that the surgeries and the recovery from injuries is better than it used to be. I mean, I am actually old enough to still remember the Bernard King in the NBA was the first player that really ever got back to, you know, at least his thought, ever got back to a high-level sport after ACL surgery. There was a day and a time not very long ago where that ended your career, and it wasn't just ACL injuries. I mean, look at Tommy John surgery. Up until 1974, none of those pitchers ever got back, and so I think that now we're seeing players that recover from injuries and, yes, go on to have very long careers. So I think really the athletes are getting, like we said, faster and stronger, and they're doing more to take care of their bodies. And then we're, you know, the doctors and the physical therapists and the athletic trainers are helping them recover from injuries and get back to sports better than we ever have before. And I think it will only get better. I don't think we're at our peak. I think we're going to continue to figure out ways to do the surgeries in a less invasive way, and the rehab protocols will get better so that they get back on the court or field that much faster.
Yeah, you said, I'm glad you said it, because I was going to say it. It's because of guys like you and Dr. James Andrews that have really brought the respect and the doctors out to the in prominence to the people to know the good work that they're doing and all the advancements you guys have done to put the athletes back on the field. And you know, used to be when you had a bad knee injury, you were pretty much done. Now these guys are popped back up, and 8 weeks later, they're back out there. So it says a lot about you guys. And let's have a little fun here and talk about, I guess some people call them urban legends, but we'll talk about the Olympics that just got over with about a month ago. And a couple of the breakout stars of the Olympics, and I wrote a piece on it, and I talked to you about it. I think a couple of the breakout stars weren't Usain Bolt or Misty May and Kerry Walsh. I mean, we all knew about those people. What we didn't know about, a lot of people didn't know about, were kinesio tape and compression socks. And I just want to, we can kind of look at those real quick. And I just kind of want to know if those things are they really work, or are they kind of urban legend, or kind of, the placebo effect in going on here with those type of products.
Well, the thing, let's start with the kinesio taping, and I think anybody, if you don't know that word, that's the tape that you see all these Olympic athletes with in its weird colors, and it's in weird patterns all over their bodies.
Colors, and they got it in these patterns on their bodies, and some people think it's for decoration, but the athletes are thinking it serves a purpose. Go on and talk about that.
Right, and I think there's a... I can't give you a black and white answer. It's absolutely good or it's absolutely bad. The theory behind kinesio taping is that if you've got some sort of ache or pain related to mechanics issues or muscle fatigue that's causing that joint and the muscles to work just slightly improperly and it causes pain. So maybe you have a shoulder pain and that creates a little bit of alteration in your mechanics and then your rotator cuff doesn't fire quite normally or in the same patterns. What the kinesio tape does is it pulls the muscles in a certain way to try to get the mechanics and the technique back to normal and decrease pain. And so for some problems, we think that kinesio taping can be fairly helpful. The problem is that it depends. It's very dependent on the person putting the tape on in the right patterns and pulling the muscles in the right way. And it has to be a problem that it's going to help. There's a lot of studies out there and a lot of, quite honestly, injuries or pains that athletes are trying to use it for where there's no science that it would help at all. So I think, as you said as well, there is in those athletes somewhat of a kinesio or of a placebo effect. So I think for some problems, some kinds of pain in the front of the knee, it can be helpful. For some shoulder impingement and what we used to call rotator cuff tendonitis type of pain, there's some use for it. I think for just, you know, like you saw some of these athletes with it on their abdomen and all lower, you know, I think that's where it gets to be a little bit more of a stretch. As for the compression socks, I think there's much less data to support that. But I know, I'll be honest, I see it even at the high school level that kids say that some of that can be, that helps them perform better. I don't know that there's a lot of science behind it in terms of muscle firing ability or anything like that. But the flip side of it is it really has no harm. It's not doing any damage. So if they try it and they feel like they're better, and maybe they are actually a little bit better, then I'm fine with it. It may have a little bit of a role in balance and what we call proprioception, which is kind of a joint position sense. So there may have, it may have that kind of a feedback effect and benefit. But quite honestly, there's obviously plenty of people that compete without them and do just fine. So I never pushed, quite honestly, either of those, but I don't have a problem with athletes trying it either.
Yeah, in my walks or whatever, I see more and more runners wearing the compression socks, and you know, people, the distance runners wore them in the Olympics, as did Allyson Felix, the sprinter. I don't know how that really helps a sprinter per se, but it's also amazing how they had different colors to match the different uniforms they were wearing. These companies really prepared these athletes for the spotlight, and you know, these products were front and center at the Olympics. So it's it was neat to see them, and there's always new products like that coming out. But you know, the Kinesio tape, I just couldn't believe all the different colors and how they had it right, matching with the uniforms. So, I mean, there was thought that went into that more than just, I think, more than just the purposes or the...
Well, and along those lines, the Olympic athletes very likely have a medical staff that knows how the proper taping techniques and know how to do it. But if you're, you know, a 16-year-old kid or a 35-year-old weekend warrior runner that just goes to a sporting goods store and buys the tape and just tries to slap it on, there's really good chance it's not going to help, and in theory actually may increase pain. So I think the key is, if you're going to try it, maybe get with a physical therapist that's been taught the proper techniques and things like that, because the tape, it has to be done correctly. Otherwise, it really isn't doing much of anything.
It looks cool, though.
It does look cool, I will say. The spider web on the abdomen was a nice touch. That was my favorite.
Yeah, that was really something. And I've seen, you know, runners wearing one compression sock and not another one. So I don't know, you know, they're trying to make a fashion statement with that as well.
And even not just the sock. I mean, look at in the NBA, and I don't know, there was rumors that they were actually going to get, you know, make it illegal. But those sleeves that they were wearing on the shooting arms, you know, it's hard to really say there's a definitive evidence that those help. But again, there's probably really very little harm in it either.
They have those compression garments on so much of their body, you can barely see their face anymore. So, you know, they'll put it on wherever they want to. But, you know, great information, David. And I guess if you could just give, you know, one tip to a young athlete about something they can do to try to stay injury free, or something they can do preventative, what would you give them? Just one main tip.
Absolutely. What I would emphasize to young athletes is, especially at a young age, make sports fun. And you don't necessarily have to pick one sport at 8 or 9 or 10 years old and play it year round. Play different sports throughout the season. One, it'll help you figure out what you like, but more importantly, it'll give your body time to rest, you know, so you're not, say, baseball pitching, just stressing your shoulder and elbow month after month for year after year without enough time to rest. So it has added benefits. You do everything you can to prevent overuse, hopefully develop or prevent the development of pain and injuries that would keep you out of playing sports at all.
Since this is the Tech of Sports, David, I always ask all my guests one last question. What's the one piece of modern technology that you, as a successful and you know, popular doctor there in Charleston, what's the one piece of modern technology you can't live without?
Well, at least in terms of what I do on my real job as an orthopedic surgeon, I would say the arthroscopy tower, the ability to look in joints with a scope, a little tiny camera. I mean, I did 2 ACL surgeries in younger athletes and a labral repair this morning, all through the scope, where we used to have to do these monster incisions. And I think we were talking about things that have really changed athletes being able to play sports, the ability to do surgeries through two or three little poke holes instead of these 6-inch incisions. Not only can I not live without it, but I think that sports and athletes can't live without it either.
And I'm sure in your personal life, it's probably your iPhone or Android phone, probably.
Yeah, the iPhone is huge. The internet, literally the amount that you can do these days on your phone.
That's
I mean,
amazing.
And medical stuff, it's getting to that. I don't do as much of it like on my iPad and stuff, but it's coming. I think there's a lot of it. And then obviously with the blogging and writing and all that I do, I mean, you can do that from anywhere these days. With an internet and a laptop or internet and a phone, you can do really just about any field of work of anything. I love technology. I could talk about it. We could do another hour about that. So I'll stop there.
We'll do it at some point and appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Those answers. No other guest has ever said a machine to do the surgery. So you had a first there on this show. So that was great. And just give the audience one more time, your website and
Absolutely.
Your Twitter account to follow. And if any single women are looking, you're a single doctor in South Carolina there, maybe we'll do a little matchmaking here and try to find someone.
Oh,
for
nice.
You.
All right. So people can check out the blog, and that's drdavidgeier.com. And it's, as you pointed out, GEIER. Pretty easy to find. And sports, injuries, prevention, treatment, health, wellness, all of that. And also, I love Twitter. That's Dr. David Geyer, or at Dr. David Geyer. I have all sorts of other things I do, Facebook and LinkedIn and all this stuff. But Twitter and the blog are probably the best thing. I do also have a sports medicine podcast, a weekly podcast, the Dr. David Geyer Show on iTunes, if people want to check that out or submit questions to it. I talk about famous athletes and I answer questions and I pick one hot topic of the week. I think actually this week I might be talking about injury prevention and ACL injury prevention. If that's another injury, if we can stop a few of those, that's always a good thing. So check that out if you get a chance.
Sure, we will. And I'm just getting direct messages right now from the women in the media tent at the Family Circle Cup. They're looking forward to seeing you this weekend. So at the tennis tournament. So be on the lookout for it.
I'll be at the World Team Tennis. Anybody out there? It's a great event. Not to meet me, but if you like tennis, it's a great event in Charleston. Lots of music. I have a great, as you and I were talking about, a great field. John McEnroe, Venus Williams, Martinez Hingis. Should be a great event this year. So might have to avoid the media tent. I don't know that I need the spotlight.
Okay, so that's a note to the stalkers. Stay away from Dr. Geyer. So,
anytime.
Thanks, David. Great having you on. We'll see you soon. And just want to let everyone know you've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast, a Netcast Studio production.